One thing I wanted to add real quick before we get into this episode is that Bill and I have done a premium episode. That's right, the first premium episode of the Dad Podcast. If you want to listen to it like it was old school, or if you're an old listener who misses our dear friend Bill Glass, all you got to do is go to thedadpodcast.com, click on the store tab on the homepage, and that will take you to a spot where you can download an MP3 version of 1 hour and 20 minutes of Bill and I doing old school funny. We talk about his kids joining the soccer league. We talk about his parents. We get an update on them. And then we talk about my experiences with preschool. So please check that out at thedadpodcast.com. Then click on the store and pick it up for just $3.
I'm here to tell you about Naptime Radio. It's a show for moms and dads, and these chicks are super cool.
Mac Daddy and Damia.
And they want you to listen.
Yes, we want it. We want it so bad.
I know you do. Heather and Kate offer helpful info for parents with their power naps. Oh, and did I mention, these chicks are sexy as hell, y'all.
Let's awesome. Ride that train.
All I need is a ticket.
Let's eliminate one article of clothing for one meal. How about that?
Oh, now it's a party. So go to naptimeradio.com or click on the logo available on our site.
Nailed it!
I said, hey, listen to me, listen to my words as they vanish. Chase the sun and get crazy, have some fun. And if you're on the run, we're chasing the sun.
Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. This is episode number 40, and here with me, who better to have on the Dad Podcast than my dad, Jesse Worsham, is here. We are live with him via Skype. Hey, Dad, how are you?
I am doing well.
Good, good. If you hear a leaf blower in the background, that's just the fan on his computer. I know that you have built a computer that is water cooled. Is there a special kind of fan, or it's just because it's an old fan?
No, it's getting old. This is not the water cooled computer. Okay.
My dad tricks out computers like Mexicans trick out cars.
It's
how he rolls. It's interesting. We'll talk a little. Talk a little bit about you, I guess, and then we'll get into whatever else comes up. But I never really realized this until saying this right now, that you're a lot more nerdy than you would appear to be on the outside. Do you think that's a fair statement?
That is a very fair statement.
Like, you're into ham radio and all that stuff, but as I grew up, like, all we did was watch New Yankee Workshop, This Old House, and all that stuff, which isn't very nerdy. But you're not into sports in any way, shape, or form. That's not your thing. You just
no.
So you like building shit, and then anything. You were never into comic books as a kid.
No,
none
never,
of that.
Never was into sports, cards, anything.
Star Trek. Didn't like Star Trek either when you were younger?
No, I like Star Trek, the original.
The original series, but you didn't like the next generation? You didn't get into it after
didn't
that?
Didn't really get into the next generation at all.
What about Star Wars?
Star Wars I love.
You love Star Wars. Why?
Yep. Why?
Yeah.
Just the technology behind it and what it started out with. The original one was very, very cool with effects and everything, and they didn't have that much electronics and everything then. Mm.
So it was strictly because you were impressed with the way that they pulled off the special effects.
Correct.
I love it. That's why I love you, Dad. I think that's it. So you, just to give everybody a little history, and we released the episode with Grandpa earlier this year, so they got a little bit of an idea, but we'll get more in detail on kind of, because here's what I think. I think we'll do this on a regular basis, so why not have this first one? We'll get a little bit of your story, your perspective. You grew up in Northern California on a farm, correct?
Correct, and on 10 acres.
10 acres of chicken farming, or was there any?
Chicken. It was a chicken ranch originally, then we switched over to horses and a few cows, just odds and ends.
So when you farm horses, you raise them to sell?
Raise them to sell. We also, I participated in like rodeo play days and stuff for younger kids. I was a jockey of a racehorse when I was 8 years old.
See, this is great already. So how did that happen?
There was this old man that used to bring his horses over for me to break. They weren't able to ride or anything like that. I would break his horses, and he had this idea to run a thoroughbred like Appaloosa against the quarter horses and stuff in the fairground circuit and stuff like that. And he had me ride the horse as a jockey.
Here's the thing. I know this story, but it's weird. Hearing it in the context of the podcast is funny to me because, again, you sound like a guy who grew up on Little House on the Prairie when you talk about this stuff, but that couldn't be further from my childhood. Like, I know that you broke horses, but, like, and I've never thought about it because it's the same thing I imagine Jacob thinks about me being a comedian and ever being on television. Like, it's just like, oh, whatever, he's just my dad. But in the idea of, like, I don't know, it's interesting hearing you through a different lens. But I've never asked you this. How did you figure out how to break horses? Like, how did that happen?
It was from my grandfather. He was my mother's father. He was able to train a horse to do almost anything. And it was just something of an instinct that I picked up from him, I think. And we had had horses since I was maybe 2-3 years old when we got the first horse and was able to ride it and do whatever I wanted with it and everything. And then we were involved with these little play days and junior rodeos and things of like that. And these guys started bringing their horses over to me to break them and train them and do odds and ends and stuff like that. So it just grew out of that.
And so these are grown adults that are coming to you.
These are 40, 50-year-old men.
Coming to an 8-year-old kid.
Kid to ride their horses and
not even
them.
Talking to grandpa, just going straight to you.
They would talk to my dad, and then it would end up to be me that would break the horse.
Did grandpa have any ability in doing this? Did he teach you? Or?
Yeah, he did. He did, but he was, I don't know. They just liked the way that I did it better. I messed him out of his business, I guess. I don't know.
Yet another example. My father was notorious for when I was a kid saying the stuff that, you know, that you did when you were a kid, people would get arrested for, you know, today. And here's a prime example that people just come up to an 8-year-old and say, hey, I've got this half-ton beast over here. I'd like you to climb on it and let it try to throw you off. And I'm imagining that it wasn't like grandma and grandpa would be sitting at the end of the pasture leaning on a fence.
No, I was there by myself doing it.
And you would go to their houses or the horses would be
rocking? They would bring the horses over to our place so that I could work with it more hours a day.
So you would come home from school and then
Go and break these horses and train them.
And how long does it take to break a horse?
Depends on the horse's attitude and what's going on with it. Some horses could be broke pretty easily. Mm-hmm. Others would take longer and longer periods of time.
Just because if they were stubborn?
They were headstrong, stubborn, had a mean streak to them, anything of that, it would take much, much longer. Mm-hmm. But some horses you could do within a week or two. Others might take a month, maybe 2 months.
And did people pay you for this, or you just did it because
It was just, I did it. It was just my thing.
I wonder if Grandpa was getting paid and you didn't know about it. That'd be funny.
He might have been. I should have asked him about that.
But
child slavery.
So what's it like growing up? Because I think this is something that most of the world today could not relate to. And again, I apologize in advance to the listeners if they don't think this is interesting, but for me, this is untreaded territory, which is weird because you and I are very close. We talk all the time. You were the right best man and one of the best men in my wedding, and so I just think it's interesting that I don't really know a lot about this aspect of your life other than the like kind of overview of stories that I've had. But what's it like growing up on a chicken farm?
It was cool. There was you never ran out of things to do. We played outside with the horses, animals. We had chores of gathering the eggs. That was one of our jobs. When I was 2-3, well, same age as Jack, mm-hmm. I was grating eggs on an egg grater as they came in, and we would box them up and then sell those eggs. But I would sit on this little apparatus and grate eggs.
How did you at 2 years old?
2 years old, I could tell which one was a large grade, double A or whatever, and a small grade or a medium grade.
Really?
From the size of them.
Yeah.
And they would come down this little belt and go into this grader, and I'd finish them off.
That makes my son a total asshole. He can't do shit. He can't do shit. He can't do a damn thing. He could barely even talk.
Yeah, but it was different because we had things that were... it was a family business.
Yeah.
So everybody participated in it. I mean, you know, your kids go around with you at your job and help you do things.
That's true.
It was no different, except, you know, we were dealing with machinery and a lot of other things.
No, that's a solid point. Because, well, Jacob more so than Jack, because I've been more challenged with the second child. But Jacob at about two knew what a screwdriver was and a wrench, and because he would help me out around the apartment and stuff like that. So I could say, hey, hand me the wrench, and he would bring me the crescent wrench while I was fixing like something under a toilet or something like that.
Right.
So how is it that you could grow up on a chicken farm? And again, that people that haven't heard that episode earlier on, it's discussed at length at how poor you guys were. How do you still manage to enjoy eggs and or chicken? Because I imagine that was breakfast, lunch, and dinner in some way, shape, or form.
For a long time, I was not able to.
Yeah?
Because you're right. It was, you know, eggs in the morning, chicken for lunch, chicken for dinner.
Because it was essentially free.
Well, it was free. We raised it. You know, and it was my job to go out and kill the chickens or whatever for lunch or dinner or whatever that was.
How old were you when you were killing chickens?
I was 3-4 years old.
Here's the thing. This is where I am connected to your childhood, because every time somebody says, and this must just make you want to vomit and start punching kindergartners left and right, but every time somebody says something like my kid watching a PG-13 is too traumatic, he doesn't know how to do that, like I just flash back. I didn't even think of you, but I flash back a little bit further back. But it's like you're at 3 years old going around literally grabbing a live chicken by the head and spinning it over your head, and to you this is fun.
Yeah,
this is fun, and you're ending its life for the sake of, you know, and I would imagine you have an even more grounded perspective on where your food comes from than a normal person, and you never saw this as traumatic at all.
No, never.
Did did Uncle Joel, Uncle Johnny, did either of them see that as being traumatic? Or
they never really participated in it. They didn't like it.
Really?
I'm assuming it was just my attitude from hanging out with my father. I got his values, his perspective on thing, that chicken was just the next meal.
Yeah.
It wasn't a live animal.
It wasn't a pet.
We were going to eat it.
That's what it was there for. It was no different than an ear of corn to you or a carrot.
No.
Yeah.
And when you live on a farm or anything like that, everything has its purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And everything has its job to perform or whatever. And if, you know, you're not performing your job, you don't be there no more. Bayan con Dios.
So, I'm trying to figure out a way to kind of structure this thing while we're doing it, I'm reminded of all the little stories. Like, I remember you telling me about how funny you thought it was to go in and, because you would kill chickens. I would imagine, here's the way a layperson imagines it, is that it's about 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We're going to be having chicken for dinner because we grew up on a chicken farm. Jesse, you go out and kill the chicken for the dinner, but you would actually do 4 or 5 at a time because it was such an arduous task to prepare them, right?
Right. And then you would do 3 or 4 chickens, and that would do you for the next day or two.
Okay. And so you told me as a kid that one of the things that would make you laugh is that you would run through there and you'd grab them, like almost like one arm, one head, as they ran by you. You'd swing them over your head and let them go, because then you got to see their heads flop to one side and let them
run.
They would just,
it was a nervous reaction, but they would just flop around uncontrollably.
And still run and like bump into each other?
It still runs, you know, wobbling and all over like, you know, a bunch of drunken chickens or whatever.
I'm so angry that I've never thought to do this before, because I really think that anything that makes me weird or crazy will now become clear to our listeners as you and I get to talk to each other and laugh at the same shit. Because I wasn't even there, but I think it's so funny just to watch a chicken's head, completely lifeless head and eyes open while the body is running around like it's some kind of
It was a crazed animal. I mean, it was just nervous reactions, all it was.
Oh, damn it. Well, that reminds me of Grandpa and his wonderful desire, and I guess you could say hobby, if you would, of castration. He was a sommelier of removing testicles.
he was. Well, and my other grandfather was the same way too. My mother's father. He was the one that really, really kept it going. He had always done it, and he passed that on to my father, basically. Uh-huh. And any animal, any male, they lost their testicles. It was just that was because you were raising animals to get larger, to butcher, to eat. Uh-huh. And if you remove their testicles, they get fatter and bigger.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they're more easily contained and controllable.
Yeah.
So that was there, and it would be anything and everything. I remember my grandfather I was 3-4 years old, because he would raise pigs, and they would have a litter of pigs, and he'd send us into this pen to grab these little piglets.
Yeah.
Well, we'd grab them by the hind feet, and the old sow would get mad as soon as the pig squealed. We'd go running over to the fence where he was, hand him the pig. He made sure that he had the pig in his hand before he tried to help us over the fence, and the old sow was chewing on our feet and everything else. And then once he had the pig in the clear, he goes, okay, go get another one.
Now, were you...
And we thought nothing of it. It was a game.
So you thought this was fun?
This is like video games.
Right.
But in real life.
Here's the thing, too, is that there is an element. Tell me if I'm also being a city boy pansy, but there's an element where you could really get hurt by this sow because you're a 30-pound
If she would have got us on the ground, yeah, because that was like a 400-pound sow.
And
she could have got us on the ground and just chewed us up.
4 or 5
But his thing, he needed the piglet first before he needed us.
Yeah. Now, do you think on any level, because this is – I was talking about this with another parent at the preschool recently where I just –
Wow.
I said, I feel, not this very story, but the kind of this concept is that I feel like we're, by becoming more self-aware, there are good and bad elements to it. But one of the bad elements that I feel is coming out of people becoming self-aware within parenting is that, to me, there's something to be said about, like, there's a lot of messages being sent when that pig is picked up before you are. I imagine if I put myself in a young you shoes that there's a little bit of humor in it that you kind of grow up and go, how funny is it that he would always grab the pig before?
He would sacrifice me for the pig.
Exactly. You think that's funny, but you know what I mean? You're not sitting there going, oh, woe is me. Oh, it's all, you know what I mean? And at the same time, too, that there's a lesson of, like, work. You're involved in the work even though you're little.
Right.
It's a humbling thing where you're not as important. You're also getting the lesson of that there are things in the world that can hurt you, but it's not necessarily so, that the less you are afraid of them, the more you're in control of the situation.
Right.
Am I wrong on all of these? Or
No, the less you're afraid of it, the more, I guess, more protected or aware you are. And the whole time, I mean, people would look at it today and go, oh, my God.
Right. There are people listening
to that. But I was never in fear of anything, of the pig or anything else. She was, you know, she was big. She couldn't run that fast. I could outmaneuver it.
Yeah.
So it all just goes back to your perspective. You know, people nowadays would just go, oh, my God, that's horrible. But to us, that was just everyday life almost.
Now, do you think that was at all the point when he's grabbing the pig before? Like, what do you think your grandfather was thinking when
I don't know. He was laughing most of the time.
Okay.
Because it was a game to him. I mean, the pig was after us. Uh-huh. He had to have the little piglet, and, you know, he had to keep us moving so we could go get another one. And there may be 4, 5, 6 little piglets that you had to do. So you had to keep running back in and grab one, and every time it squealed, the mother would come after you.
So what kind of sanitary instruments are used in castrating a male pig in the farm in the early 60s?
I think they still make it. It was called Hexol. It was a sterilizing that he would dip his knife in and dress the wound out and everything with it, too. But
oh, really? So I was joking because I thought it was just a literally a pocket knife that they would cut. And
well, it was a pocket knife. It was his favorite pocket knife.
Uh-huh. Oh, but there was an ointment
that he would dip it into this. It was a white, milky sterilizing solution.
Uh-huh.
And he would, you know, dip his knife in that. He would wash the area cut with it before and after, and then just release the animal again.
And how do they keep the animal from, like, bleeding out?
It never bled all that much.
Oh, okay.
It would bleed for a while, but then, like, when you pull the testicle, you would use this instrument that would sort of mash everything together and, you know, not sear it off with heat, uh-huh. but with pressure, and it wouldn't bleed all that much at all, uh-huh. especially on the young animal or whatever. An older animal would bleed more, but not that much.
Interesting. So that... I'm sorry. It's just I keep imagining.
See, you lose your thought.
I keep imagining this idea of, you know, there's a lot of mud and just you running around and it, and yes. it makes me giggle. And then that made me think of, it wasn't the same grandpa, but wasn't there somebody that didn't like people leaning on his car? So he like hooked up a switch.
That was my mother's father, the one that castrated. He would take an old Model A coil
mm-hmm.
and take the positive end of that, which was several thousand volts, mm-hmm. and take a wire from that and ground it to the body. So if somebody came leaning against his car, he'd hit a button, and it'd just drop them to their knees on the ground. It was like hitting somebody with a taser.
Yeah, I know.
And he would be just laughing like hell in the car.
And wasn't he the same guy that had, like, put a pad out by a telephone pole, and that way if a dog came up and pissed on the telephone pole?
He would get shocked.
He
used to run electricity with just the positive wire and use the earth as a ground, so anytime you touched anything, you'd get tingled or shocked or whatever. And his cows, when we were milking them, he had an old semi-automatic milker, but you had to hang it over the cow's back and strap it on. Uh-huh. And a lot of times that would shock, and the cow would start dancing around, kicking at you and everything else.
Because that would shock because of a joke he was playing, or that was part of the
way? No, because he didn't have enough money to run two wires out to the barn, so he only run one
was grounded.
And used an earth ground.
Yeah. So there was always current. That's awesome.
Oh yeah, there. Anytime you became less resistive to the ground than whatever it was attached to, you got shocked.
And is this the same guy that would drop that same coil in a lake and fish with it?
And fish with it too.
Yeah.
He'd turn it on and it'd stun the fish. It'd float up. He'd pick what he wanted and go home.
Oh damn it!
Different entry. Well, and like I said, today you would go to jail for that.
Yeah.
Or you'd be, you know, prosecuted or whatever. But that was just a way of life. That was food. That was entertainment. Everything. So, and it was very, very entertaining because of all the different things and stuff that we got to do and got involved with. We never had or never sat around saying, I'm bored. I need something to do. We always had ample things to do. And most... you know, 99% or 95% of it was all outside doing either chores or working with animals or something of that nature.
So let's talk a little bit more about Grandpa, if you don't mind, because he's got some great things that he used to do with you guys. The first one that comes to mind is that he taught you guys to dig a hole down into the ground and then kind of come at it at an angle. Like you would go down deep enough and then... he gave you, like, a way to put a little stove, like, out of a coffee can. Am I remembering this?
Well, yeah, we would be, he'd help us build, and we dug out sort of like a fort. It was, you know, we were little then, so it was maybe 6 feet by 6 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And he would take this lumber, put over it, and then we'd cover it back up and then dig down an entrance. So we had a little underground fort. But he would take these old 5-gallon paint buckets, basically, then, turn them over and put a hole in the top with a stovepipe up through the ground, and we could build little fires and cook and do things underneath.
Uh-huh. And how often did you guys do that? Sorry, Jack got angry about something.
Well, we did that for years, from the time that I was 4 or 5 years old, for at least 3 or 4 years. We had these little forts, and we could go hide in there and whatever.
Wow. And then
he was always constructing or finding ways that we could play, we could do. I mean, he put up what you'd call a zip line. It was a big cable that he welded together, this, like, 4-inch pipe that stood 30, 35 feet in the air. And he welded these little rebar on it as a ladder. We'd climb up that, and this cable went out about 150 feet to the ground.
And how tall, how high would it, did it start?
About 35 feet in the air. Uh-huh. Well, like a, you would be like climbing up a telephone pole.
Okay.
And you'd be on top of this telephone pole with this cable coming up to it. And this cable run through about a foot long piece of pipe. And we'd hang onto the pipe and slide down to the other end.
About how fast do you think you're going by the time you got to the end?
Oh, maybe 20 miles an hour. But it wasn't going fast enough, so he started greasing, putting the grease in the pipe so we could go faster. It was always, he always challenged us or pushed us to our limits. That was a cool thing about him. He never stopped challenging you. He always gave you another task that was more difficult than the last, or more adventurous, or, you know, of that nature. As soon as you got used to one thing, he would just ramp it up a bit and make it, you know, that much more difficult, or that much faster, or that much more dangerous. I mean,
these were never things that you guys had come to him and say, hey, we want to build an underground fort.
No.
This was his idea that he would just come up with.
He would just, yeah, he would think up things for us and build things for us that were just amazing. I remember when I was, what, 4 or 5 years old, I took a nap, and when I woke up, he had built a treehouse out in this big tree in the backyard. Mm-hmm. That was just his thing. It was always...
Did you get the same treehouse that we got, which was essentially fence posts
at
different angles?
We had a big platform, had ropes hanging off it, but...
That son of a bitch.
Well, but you grew up with a much smaller tree.
Yeah.
You know, this was a huge
and
cotton
an older
tree
dude.
In our backyard, and he trimmed out all the interior branches and made a big platform. I had like a 6 by 6 foot wood platform up there.
That's awesome.
And that set probably 20 feet off the ground.
How long did you guys live at the farm?
I lived there from the time... Oh, well, I was born there, and we moved out, so I was, what, 9? Yeah, about 9, almost 10 years old. I left there when I was in 7th grade.
Okay. Now, I want to go back a little bit. Why do you think, did he ever articulate this to you, that he was always trying to push or to... Do you think it was, like, here's the vibe that you get from him, even from being his grandchild, is that he just liked to fuck with you because it amused him. There was an element to that, but I know that he maybe wasn't aware of how it was, but he knew that it was also good for you to a certain extent.
He did, but he never really portrayed that to you. You always felt that he was just, you know, screwing with you or getting your reaction. But when you start to think about it, it was in his own way of growing you up and having you deal with different situations and stuff.
Like I akin it to like a redneck brain teaser. Is that
yes?
That
would be very close to it.
that's what growing up with him.
And it was like I said, it was always just fun and challenging. Everything with him was fun.
There's another story that I remember from him where when you guys would wet the bed, he would chase you with a rooster.
He would go get a rooster and corner us in a corner and, you know, throw this rooster at us and say, you know, if you don't stop wetting the bed, we're going to keep getting the rooster.
That just cracks me up because here's what I know now as being a parent is that you kind of spend a lot of time going, fuck, he's doing this a lot. And I just wish he would stop. And so I just imagine him crawling into bed with grandma one night and saying to her, he goes, man, we got to figure out a way to get these kids to stop wetting the bed. And then Eureka!
The rooster will do it.
I've got an Excelsior. I've got it. If I get one of those roosters, they're pretty nasty and mean, and they'll scratch at a little kid.
Right.
So if I say I'm going to throw this rooster at him, then maybe that'll scare him into stopping.
But he was always challenging you with fear and stuff to get you through that next cycle. So if you were afraid of something, he would keep just throwing it out at you until you became almost accustomed or less fearful of it until you got over that.
Do you think that's how his childhood was? That's what his father would do to him? Like, here's what I'm thinking. You grew up more with, like, William and Dillard and how they interacted with their kids. Did you see any of that paralleled with their kids?
No. That was him.
That was all him.
That was him.
What did Grandma think of this?
Yeah, he came up with all this stuff. He was very much different than his brothers and everything else. They were more conservative and just more mainstream. He was always off on the cutting edge of things.
Mm-hmm. What did Grandma think of all these crazy things, like running on the zip line and all that stuff?
It bothered her to some extent, but she knew he wasn't going to stop it, so she just went along with it. And as you go down, because I was the oldest, my middle brother, he was not too bad, but less involved in it. And then my youngest brother, he never really got a whole section of that because, let's see, we moved away from there when he was 2, maybe 3 years old. So he never really got the full-on sampling of what you do in the country or on the farm.
Because you guys had already moved into Turlock at that point.
We'd moved into Modesto.
Oh, okay.
And then, because you look at my whole life up until we left, he was self-employed, did farm work, clipped cows, all kinds of stuff. But he was constantly around. Mm-hmm. And then by the time when we moved to Modesto, he started driving trucks, so he was home less and less and less. And for the most part, during my youngest brother's growing up, he was only home maybe 2-3 nights out of the week because he drove truck to L.A., would lay over and come back.
So he
was always gone a day or two at a time.
Oh, interesting.
So it was a much – and it was on a much smaller scale. You couldn't do a lot of things because you only had this one city lot and maybe one tree or whatever. So he was very closed in of what – his full potential was when he was out on the farm. We're on the farm. We had 10 acres, and we could do whatever we dreamed up. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever came to our imagination or whatever came to his imagination, he would just build it, and we'd do it. We had space to do that.
Yeah, that reminds me, there's a story that goes, if I remember it correctly, that he came home with, like, 2 or 3 goats.
That goes back to when my youngest brother, he was allergic to milk.
Oh, okay.
Cow's milk. And they figured out that he was not allergic to the goat's milk. So he brought home I was 5 or 6 goats. He went and bought them, brought them home. And when I got home from school, he goes, "What's the goats for?" Or I asked him what the goats were for. He said, "Well, it's for your brother's milk, and whatever's left over we'll feed to the dogs. But we had to get up every morning and milk these goats milk them in the afternoon."
He did it just so you kids had something to do before you
went. Well, yeah, his whole premise on a lot of things is you always had something to do. You were never just sitting around. Mm-hmm. And it was the same way. Your work was never finished until everybody's work, even your neighbor's work, was finished. Then we all played, and he played to great extent, but the work had to be done first.
What do you think, in your opinion, was the biggest thing that either you took from him or that you appreciated the most for what he did for you as a father?
He just instilled in me self-esteem.
How do you think?
Because you would be doing something, and he'd tell you to go get something. Or, you know, in a case, he says, "Well, go get that tractor and bring it over here." Well, you didn't really know how it functioned or how to use it, but because he told you to do that, I just always assumed I was capable of doing it. Mm. So I never asked questions. I would just go do whatever he told me to do. I mean, it was, you know, electrical wiring, driving vehicles, anything and everything. He just instilled in you the knowledge or the feeling that, yes, I'm capable of doing that, so I don't question it. I just go do it.
And because hearing that, I would agree after knowing stories and him and all that stuff, but I'm trying to figure out what was the nuts and bolts behind it. And the only thing I can think of in my assumption is that by him just coming up with these things to do, you, in a sense, gained a little bit of independence, because I'm assuming there would be moments that you would fail, and then you would have to pick up your mess and then do it right.
Right, but he never really criticized us or anything for failing. His big thing is at least you went out and tried it.
Oh.
You know, I mean, he would get angry if we broke something or wasn't, you know, wasn't paying attention and broke something. But as long as we were trying to succeed at something, he never really got on to us or anything like that. It was that was a to me was a positive influence for that. And it was a way that he would ask you to go do something. You just took it for fact that you were capable of doing that. So you never questioned him. You just went and did it.
And if you went and did it and it didn't go perfectly or whatever,
he would help us out or show us or, you know.
That's smart. I didn't know that part of it. I didn't know that he would be like, oh, well, okay.
But you were always challenged to go do it on your own first.
Hmm. So in a sense, the fundamental thing that he had was expectation.
Expectation. He always had high expectations of
something,
us or whatever
there,
we
something
were doing.
Had to be going on. Something had to be done.
Right.
But you also said that he didn't necessarily push education as much as you had wished. Why was there
no
expectation?
Not at all. I think maybe because of his lack of education. I don't know the extent of that, but he was never.
Did he finish high school?
He was more impressed with somebody that could take something and change it and make it usable for a purpose. Hmm. He wasn't really concerned with education or anything of that nature.
Do you know if he did he finish high school is what I wanted to ask.
Only because the school burned down.
What does that mean? I don't understand.
Well, the school burned down. They lost all the records. So they handed out these report cards to the kids and asked them to, you know, please fill in your grades that you thought you had. So he wrote down his grades were passing and boom.
Even though he was not passing?
He was not passing.
Really?
No.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome.
It just wasn't important to him or anything at that time.
And so I guess what one could assume that because he had built a life, and as he talked about in that episode, that even he remembered, because he didn't know necessarily how everyone else was living their life, because the farm life was kind of isolating, that you never had there wasn't something like the Joneses to try to keep up with, or there was no grass greener on the other side because you couldn't actually see the grass on the other side.
Well, you couldn't see it, but we were always better than the Joneses because we had more cool shit to play with.
Oh, and when you grew up.
Yeah, the kids from around the neighborhood or even in my school always flocked up our house because he had the cool stuff. He would build the cool stuff.
Uh-huh. And at one point, didn't he give you a golf cart or something that you guys would.
Well, goes back. Remember,
you used to ride horses to school.
Country.
I can't believe I forgot about that. You used to ride horses to school.
We would ride horses to school on occasions. But we had a canal that was about a quarter of a mile away from the house. There we used to go down to, and that's where we swam in the summer. So we didn't have bicycles or anything. What he did is he traded for this golf cart, and we'd ride this golf cart a quarter of a mile down to this canal, go swimming all day, and then come back home. And we were 5 years old, 5-6 years old.
Wow.
Driving this golf cart down this country road, down a canal bank, swimming all day and coming back.
And wasn't there a situation, like, I remember you telling the story about a chihuahua that would come out and chase you from somebody's house or some kind of.
Well, there was a next-door neighbor had this little chihuahua. He'd come out and bark at you if you were walking by or anything, and he got where he would start chasing the golf cart. Well, he got up close to the golf cart, bit at the tire. Well, it sucked him up into the fender well, and he was just getting beat to hell on top of his tire in the fender well. It was hilarious. Yeah, and thump, 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 thump. But he never chased us after that. Oh, he learned his lesson.
And it's such a. I'm laughing doubly because it's not until this very conversation that I have realized how much I appreciate any kind of slapstick humor with animals.
He was totally that way. He would do crazy things to animals and stuff.
I don't know if any other family would laugh as hard when their dog ran into a sliding glass door as I remember us.
But at the same, he would think that was totally hilarious.
Yeah.
Because it was just off the wall, took the dog out of its, you know, realm, and bam, and, you know, and the dog sitting there like, what happened? And to him, that was highly humorous, highly humorous. But you have to look at his perspective, too, because he would watch rodeo, didn't care about the score, or anything else that the Cowboys did. Mm-hmm. All he wanted to do is see him bucked off, beat up, trampled.
The guy,
you know,
too. Okay.
Or something like that. Then that was hilarious. It's the same way he would watch car races, but he enjoyed the wrecks more than anything else. Yeah. He didn't really care that much about the racing.
Now it makes sense why his favorite cartoon when I was there as a kid was always Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner. Yeah. He just loved
it. Loved it.
He loved that stuff.
But only, and because he was always, you know, doing goofy things and getting hurt or whatever, but he was always improvising and making up all these contraptions and stuff. And he, you know, Dad would do the same thing. he was hilarious.
Yeah. Were you guys the only ones that would ride your horses to school, or would there be other kids that did it too just because of the area?
There was maybe two other kids, but we were the ones with the most horses and
now
stuff.
Was it because you guys were the only farm nearby, or just because
no, there was farms all over, but most of them were either like they were growing hay, mm-hmm. or they were on dairies with cows. They didn't have horses. Mm-hmm. We had the most horses and everything in the area. At one time, when I was 5, 6 years old, we probably had 30 head of horses.
Really? Why so many horses? Would he sell them, or?
He would sell, trade. He did all kinds of things with them. And, you know, we were involved with these little play days and stuff. He used to race chariots with horses and stuff. He used to pull a sled with weight on it with these horses as a competition.
You told me, and there's pictures I remember seeing as a kid that he took a hood off a car, turned it upside down, and rigged it to horses.
That was our horse sled. Because he'd take the harness and hook the single tree to the front of the hood, turned upside down, and then we'd had reins. We'd sit on that hood and drive the horse all over the place. It was just what was available. He would take any scrap of whatever and turn it into something you could have fun with.
Let's take that then, unless there's anything else that you think of. Like, what do you remember him being like when you were a teenager? Or was it he was working so much at that point that it wasn't...
As a teenager, like,
did you guys have that head butting?
It was different.
Did you guys have head butting or no?
It was what?
Did you guys have headbutting, you know, like every father's
son? We always had headbutting because he was purely functional. Didn't care what anything looked like as long as it was functional. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, if a 1-inch screw in a wall worked good, 3 inches must work 3 times better. So he didn't care what it looked like. I was more aesthetics and wanted it to look nice and proper and this. He could care less. As long as it was functional, he didn't care what it looked like. So we would butt heads on that back and forth.
Hmm. And so do you remember anything? That was the only thing you guys would really have knockdown, drag-out fights. It wasn't... And that's
interesting. Yeah, because I wanted him to change something, make it look good, and he could care less. He said, nope, it's functional. We leave it.
That's interesting because the stereotypical father-son fight is that the son is like, listen, I've got the world by the balls, dude. Why don't you get out of my way, old man? And in actuality, the teenage son is a, you know, high-functioning retard at that point. Like,
right.
He's just dumb as rocks. And you can't get around. But in your case, it was an example of the opposite, it almost sounds like, where you kind of said, listen, I've learned some ways to make this, you know, nice.
Right.
But he wasn't interested in doing that at all.
No, not at all.
Do you think that he looked at you as just being a cocky teenager and like, whatever? Or
no, we would just argue. I mean, it wasn't knockdown dragouts or, you know, it was just a disagreement. I would try to get him to go a little further, and he didn't want to go any further. You know, he always fixed something or whatever to whatever extent it just needed. He wouldn't go the extra mile to take care of something else.
He would limp it along almost.
He would limp it along.
Interesting. Well, then
he never cared anything past that. As long as it was functional, everything was good for him.
Well, let's transition from there because this is another topic that I'm kind of interested. So that's your childhood interacting with your kid. Now I'm curious, and I think some of the listeners might be interested too, to see what was it like when you became a father. So now what's it like parenting me? You got married at how old?
I was 19.
And had me 2 years later at 21?
21.
And had no money, if I remember correctly. Although I don't remember any of this, obviously, but... You were completely
I looked back the other day. When you were born, I was making like $8 an hour, maybe, and it was like $15,000 a year.
And that's in 1979. Now, would you say that would be middle class income then? Or, I mean, I don't understand.
Yeah, lower middle class.
Like, what would $15,000 a year be equivalent to now, do you think? 20? 25?
20, 25, right around in there.
Somewhere in there. So, sustainable, but not flourishing.
Sustainable, but you didn't have a lot of disposable income.
Right, right. And how did it... Like, I'm curious, this because Natalie and I, everything, and I think today, everything seems to be calculated, right? You get married or, you know, usually now the plan that people usually go through is that they go to college. After they go to college, they usually meet someone in college, spend a few years with them, and then they get married. You met mom at a Taco Bell that you worked with her at
right.
Modesto. And, how at some point, so is it just because it's a different era that you, after you graduate high school, you're like, okay, well, we're going to get married? Or was that not everybody was doing that? Or
not everybody was doing that, but it was more or less the accepted path. Mm-hmm. So you did high school, shortly after high school or whatever, you know, you got married, started a family, you had this job, you know, and that's just because I didn't really have any money or anything to go to college. My parents really didn't have it. But on the other hand of it, because I was working there at Taco Bell going to high school, as a high school kid, I was making like $800 a month off this Taco Bell. I was working 40 hours and going to high school, but and I had an in with the owner of it to a point that I even had like a company car my junior year in high school. It was a brand new 240Z, but he just liked me, and I liked working, and I didn't mind the hours. Mm-hmm. So I worked anytime, and you know,
anytime
work
called.
Was available, and that was something that my father had instilled in me, is that you worked and you worked as you know as much and as hard as you could, because eventually that paid off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and so when you become when you find out you're going to be a dad, what's your mental state at that time? I think I've told the story that mom came home and told you to sit down and said, "I'm pregnant." And you said, "Oh shit."
I said, "Oh shit."
Yeah, and then she got upset saying you didn't want me essentially or the baby. And you were trying to make it let her down easy and say, "No, it's not that. It's just it's another mouth to feed," which
Correct.
Is not very romantic. Now, me being the subject of the story, I love it. I think it's absolutely hilarious. And I love and especially now that I've had two kids, I get the dynamic. I've gotten both where with Jacob, I was completely shocked and did the exact thing you described to me as I grew up, was that I was incredibly excited and immediately depressed and afraid and anxious.
All at the same time.
With Jack, it was a little different. It was more of like a simple, like what I would imagine you articulated. It was more like, "Oh shit!" Like it was more like,
"Here we go again."
Here we fuck! Like this is the worst possible.
But you have to look at it. I'm 21 years old.
Exactly. I was 32.
And you know, now here I am. I've got another human being to be responsible for. I was only responsible for myself really before that. Mm-hmm. But now it takes on a whole nother realm, because now you got to feed, nurture, and bring up this child. And you grow, I think, slowly into it. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're learning as, because you have, today, you know, there's books, there's this, there's that, all kinds of stuff on child rearing. Then there was virtually nothing. You asked your parents a question and forged forward. That was it.
All you had was the Dr. Spock book was essentially all that
was around.
That was it. And so you guys, you're 21, and now you have a kid. What does it do to your mental? Like, here's what I remember it doing. I remember it kind of going, okay, now it's time to fucking grow up. Did you have any element of that, or did you already kind of feel like you were there?
No, I had an element of that, but it also is you take on this thing. Now I have this child, and I've got to teach it to fend for itself or be responsible. Mm-hmm. It's really hard for me because I don't do well with infants because they don't communicate with me. Mm-hmm. So from the birth to 3-4 years old, it's really a tough thing because you don't know what you're doing. The child's not responding. But after 4, and they can talk back and forth and you can share different things, then that's where I think it gets really great. Mm-hmm. That is the best time ever. Because, and I never treated you as a child or a kid or whatever. You were always so, you know, like an equal or an adult or whatever. We had conversations. We talked about things. We did things. We I challenged you, this, that, and everything else. So you grow into it slowly. And thank God, you know, they have that four-year period that you can get used to it. Then, you know, by the time then, you've got a pretty good, or I had a pretty good idea of where it was going. Mm-hmm. So, and you were getting feedback, so you know you were getting or headed in the right direction. But it's still, I reacted to you almost the same that my father dealt with me. Challenges, expectations, you know, and things of that. So that it just snowballed in together. And you look back on it now and you go, wow, we're great.
How much can you remember now? I mean, it's 30 years ago of me when I was 4 or 5. Is it kind of vague? Is it still there?
Not really vague. You were, but it's also, you are two different people. And I guess give some background on, because I divorced when you were 6, 7 years old. Mm-hmm. So you were this person here from an infant up until 6 years old. And then you took on another whole perspective for the rest of your life.
Really? So you honestly saw a change or a shift in who I was as a person?
Yes.
Really? That's interesting.
Because there was enough stress and strife and everything else prior that, yeah, you became a different person. You grew up. There's a lot of different changes in you.
I wish this wasn't about me because it wouldn't sound so incredibly narcissistic. But I really think that I think it's interesting that I don't see that. Like I don't remember. I know that there were elements that I look back and I go, because I got a stepbrother who beat up on me. Like I imagine I'm a little tougher. But other than that, I can't imagine. And I remember that I used to get sick a lot. And then
you got sick a lot. You were whiny a lot. And then, right around the 5, 6 year realm in there, you started changing. And, you know, prior to that, you were with your mom a lot. And then from about 4 on, you were associating doing things with me. Because I would bring trucks home from work, and you could play on that. You'd take a ride with me. It was just different things, different exposures to things.
Interesting. I didn't know that I was. So you were essentially working a lot before then?
Working a lot, yeah.
Oh, interesting. I really hope this is interesting to listeners. It's really interesting to me, but fuck them. So then... So here's the other part that I'm right now, I'm in the, 4-year-old range. And here's the kind of challenges that I'm dealing with my son. And some of the listeners may have heard this already, but I'm getting a lot of the whining and complaining and then crying because he doesn't get exactly what he wants. And there's a part of me that looks at it and goes, okay, I know that there's a 4-year-old brain element to this, but there's also something about... there's something different that just kind of tastes funny, you know, in my head. And I go, there's something I need to do that's a little red flaggish that I need to. And I was talking to Natalie about it and saying, you know, she goes, well, you're really hard on him. And I said, well, that's my job. I feel like it's my job as his father to lean on him. And
you're not their friend. You're their parent.
Exactly. That I need to push him in a direction and say, okay, this is what needs to be. And I now know as a grown up that I know that that's one of the best things that you did for me was that no matter how much I tried to bend and manipulate and weasel my way out of whatever you expected of me, you just held strong and said, it is what it is. And that's the way it's going to be. And it kind of teaches you that you can't manipulate the real world. There are situations that you can, and I think that I'm putting words in your mouth, that maybe there was a part of you that looked at it and goes, well, you know, good on you for trying, and that's a good skill to maybe have to try and twist things into your favor, but it doesn't always work out that way. And so you have to be prepared to just lower your head and drive forward and get through whatever bullshit is going on. So my reaction to that was, is that I try to go, well, what did my dad do for me that really helped me, that I realized was the biggest thing. And the biggest thing that you did to help me was make me get a paper out when I was 9 years old and make me pay for my own shit. Like, whatever I wanted,
right,
I paid for. And it wasn't like you were completely unhelpful or you wouldn't give me money or any of that thing, but it was just, there was definitely an...
But it was a sense that you had to earn that. And that, yes, that was the same thing, the same way I was when I, you know, we didn't have cell phones or anything when I was younger. But as soon as I got some money, I put my own phone number and everything in my room. That was mine. I paid for it. You know, and all the other little things that I wanted or thought I wanted, I paid for. I found a way to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is just meeting an expectation and becoming your own person, because you then know how to make things happen.
Yeah.
If everything's given to you, you just know they're given to you. You don't know what makes that happen, how it comes about, or what money was spent on it. You have no value of it.
Yeah. Well, and so what I did was, and I had a job that Jacob was doing a long time ago just to give him the idea of money, and you and I had talked about this on the phone where I didn't really think it had gotten through to him, and then, you know, life had changed. He was going to preschool. I was dealing with his little brother, and things got a little more difficult for me to do that, and I kind of let it go. Probably due to me not knowing if it was paying dividends mostly, and secondly, just getting kind of lazy as a parent, to be completely honest. And so I'm at the grocery store, and I look at him, and he's eyeing all the candy at the checkout stand, and all of a sudden I look at him, and I go, oh, here it comes. He's going to whine and cry because I'm going to tell him he can't have a Kit Kat. And he looks at me. He doesn't even look at me. He's just looking at the candy, and he goes, Dad, we need to clean tables. And I started laughing. I go, why? So you can get money to buy candy? And he was like, uh-huh. And he never broke, like, eye contact with all the candy. Like, I just imagine him going, if I just had $3, I think I could get two or three of these things right now.
But at the same time, when you're working with that child, you will never realize or understand what they're absorbing or what they're learning from you at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
It may be months down the road or even years down the road.
Yeah.
When all of that stuff that you showed them then starts clicking and coming together in their own process.
Yeah. Well, and that's what happened in this case. And this, I'd already had a conversation, but a few months later is when I was like, I told Natalie, I said, well, I can't back down on my expectations because I don't think they're unreasonable. And I go, but there's got to be a way that I can't just keep yelling at him. Like, that's not getting through. It's not working. So I go, I need to give him an opportunity where it's a new set of expectations. It's a new challenge that then he can, right, succeed at, and I can praise him for, and then, right, also give, and then add on to it because of the thing with the grocery store. I'm like, I'm going to throw some monetary things at it because I do believe that if he learns to pay for his own toys, that he will appreciate them even more than if he's just showered them, you know, from my friends,
correct,
and family and stuff like that. And that's another big thing that I picked up from you. And lo and behold, I was talking about this, and then he's having issues with, like, kind of fits. And if things don't go exactly the way he wants them, he kind of has, like, meltdowns, and at school and stuff like that. They've told me it's not a huge issue. This is things that I've had to kind of pry out of them. Like, I go there and I go, so how's he doing? What's going on? Like, is he well behaved? Is he, you know, la da yada da? And they always say, yeah, he's great. He's great. He's great. And then, you know, if I keep poking, they'll go, well, occasionally, you know, that kind of thing. And one of his teacher from his younger class, she said, you know what you should do is have him do things around the house. And that way you can, you know, kind of say, hey, good job, and maybe give him a little money if he does it so often.
Right.
And so it was another little scoop of validation. And so we started it, and it was insane to me, Dad. Like, first day I say, okay, here's what you're going to do. From now on, you're going to get up in the morning, and you're going to make your bed, and then you're going to get dressed for school, and then you're going to come downstairs, and depending on what time it is, if we have time, we'll have breakfast, and then you might have to go to school. But I said, if we have extra time, you're going to help me unload the dishwasher, put the dishes away. And then I go, if you do all that, and then at the end of the day, you're going to clean your room. And at the end of the day, if we do all that with no problems, you're going to get a dollar. And he was like, well, and as soon as he heard the dollar, he was like, okay. And even at learning to make his bed, like he kind of, it's interesting to me because television kind of teaches you that when you give a kid chores or anything like this, that, and I know it's because they're 12 and 13 in these shows, but they kind of go, oh, this is bullshit. Like, who fucking wants to do this stuff? But this little boy just lights up at this shit, and he comes downstairs now every day, and he goes, Dad, I made my bed. And what used to be a thing where he'd come down in his PJs and cry when I tell him he had to go get dressed for school, now it's this thing where it's like, boom, he's already dressed, locked and loaded, and And he reminds me constantly. He's like, you got to give me my dollar. Don't forget to give me my dollar.
Right.
You know, like that kind of thing. And he saved up money and went to Toys R Us. And he had $13 that he had saved up from. He'd forgotten he had like 11 bucks or something in his wallet from when he was doing the tables. So I took him to Toys R Us to get a couple of these Ninja Turtles or whatever that he wanted or whatever. And so he was looking at it, and they had a two-for-one sale. So essentially he could buy two of these Ninja Turtle action figures for the price of one, but it would cost him all of his money. And so I helped him pick them out, and then he's like, okay. And then there was this element, though, that I was kind of happy about, but it really tugged at my heart when I said, so you know you're going to have to give up all of your money that you have in your wallet. And he looked at me. He was like, oh. And I saw him, like, sink, like, fuck. Like, and he's like, oh. And I tried to say, I go, you don't have to buy anything now. You could save your money. He's like, oh, but I really want those guys. And I go, right. Well, then you could get the guys. I said, that's okay, too. I said, but I just, you know, I want you to know you're going to have to give up. And it's this part, and I think that this is also what, like, if for any amount of asshole or douchiness that arrives in any kid his age, it's because of this parental instinct that I've experienced myself that I don't know if it was always been there or if it is only my generation that has experienced this. But you look at this kid and you feel sorry for him, and you have to just tell yourself, no, it's good that he's struggling. It's a good thing for him to feel the pain and angst and sorrow of not being able to keep the $11 he's worked hard for because he decided to get this other thing, and that until he experiences that, he doesn't get to learn from it and know how to prioritize what he really wants from what he doesn't really want or need.
Right.
Am I right on that? Is that...
No, you're right. And it's a whole thing because at this age, you're allowing him to make his own decisions.
Yes.
Now, sometimes that's not great because now you have this child with opinion and
yes,
what he wants to do, and sometimes that's in conflict with you.
Yes.
But you still have to nurture him along in making those decisions. And then if he's making these type of decisions at this age, when he gets to be 15 or 18 years old, he'll know how to make decisions. He'll know how to run his life and the consequences of a bad decision.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's just handed everything and doesn't have to do anything for it, then later on in life, nothing's a value, nothing's a consequence. He doesn't understand it. But as you grow up with that, then it becomes just second nature. You're able to make those decisions because you have this input. You decide, this is where I'm going. I know I'm going to have to suffer this or I'm going to gain that.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes a reasoning process within yourself. And I was always that way because of my father. And even when we moved to Modesto, we bought a little grocery store. He had to go to work, so it was my responsibility when I came home from school, because I, you know, my mother would run it during the day, and then I would come home from school and run the grocery store until 9 o'clock at night. That was just expected of me. It wasn't anything you got to cry about, moan about, or anything else. That's just what you did.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I, at an early age, dealt with money and people and problems, and you just get used to making those decisions, and it becomes an easy process, where if you're never allowed to make a decision or make your own path, then you don't know what it is. You don't even know what the thought process is.
Yeah.
And that's a huge, big difference between myself and my younger brother. He doesn't really have or has never been given the opportunity for that thought process and decisions. He's always been told what to do or where to go and this and that. So he doesn't have that ability.
Yeah. They can't figure it out. And
no.
In your opinion, you don't think that I'm doing anything wrong by doing it with him so young?
No, I think it's completely right.
It's the best.
I've always felt, given an expectation of a child, the child will meet it or exceed it, or sometimes fall very short of it. But that child will always meet or try very aggressively to meet any and all expectations you put to them. If you have no expectations, then they're going to sit around like couch potatoes.
Yeah.
And they'll play video games, and there's just no thinking. There's no process to it.
Why do you think that they're... Because that's the thing that's so interesting to me now that I have kids, is that I don't understand why they're wired so much to go against whatever it is I want them to do. And I don't really believe that that's just my kids. Because I know there's an element of that in me. Like, if you tell me that there's something I'm supposed to do, I have a natural inclination to try to do the opposite unless I respect the shit out of you and it makes complete sense to me. So I know that there's a little bit of that, but I think that everybody listening to this can resonate to it's like, because as a parent, I feel like that's my number one issue, that it's just like, why the fuck, if you just knew that if you just did exactly what I said when I said it, your life would be so incredible that you wouldn't even have to worry about anything. And it's like Jacob, I mean, those today was a little rough. He fell off course, but for 3 solid days, man, that kid was just perfect. He was sweet to his brother. He was hitting everything out of the park. And the only thing I could think of is that after hearing what you said is that grandpa always had a constant challenge, is that maybe I need to always have a new challenge. There needs to be a different chore and I need to cycle them through every so often. And that as long as he's being challenged, then he kind of falls in line and that's what feels good. But to get back to my point, do you have any idea why that is, why kids are wired to?
But I think it's just human nature in itself. Mm-hmm. Because we as humans always follow the path of least resistance, the easy path or whatever, the less work. So when you're trying to get him to do something and he's going no, he just wants to sort of meander through and, you know, get on the other side. Where when you have expectations and things that you wish him to do, then he has to go through that. And he is going to fight you on it. Mm-hmm. But in the younger years, if you work on that, as he gets older, that just becomes a habit. That becomes his process. So he goes and does what needs to be done.
Yeah. Because it is just a matter of being in it for the long haul then. Like, you just, if once you set it, you're like, I just got to keep.
Yeah, you can't be in it for 6 months and go, oh, well, this isn't working.
Because it's hard.
This is over years. This is over 20, 30 years. It never goes away.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, I've said that before.
To this day, you still yourself learn from things that your parents do.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's an ongoing process.
Yeah.
I don't think it ever stops. I still learn things from my parents and stuff. Mm-hmm. Either not so much by them telling me, but by their examples or how they live their life or what they do.
Yeah.
That always comes back to home or whatever.
So how do you apply this, in your opinion, to teenagers? Like, because that's obviously the most rebellious phase that every kid goes through. Like, I remember you and I being very, very close. And I remember one time saying to you, how come you yell at grandpa so much? And you said, well, life changes. And there's a certain point where I will stop yelling at you and you will start yelling at me as you get older.
Well, because you transition.
Yeah.
With my father, when I was growing up, I was always a student and he was a teacher.
Right.
And then as age progresses, I become the teacher and he's the student. And that's a difficult transition. And it's not so much that different from teenagers. They're almost adults. They're wanting to make these adult decisions and everything. They don't want you running their life. They're wanting to become independent. But unless you raise them to be independent, they have no way to go, nowhere to go. They have no plan to follow. And it takes, I mean, in all of my children, you all were almost exactly the same. You came up with the same issues, same problems, everything.
And you set this up to me, but that, so the listeners know, is that I have a stepbrother and a stepsister that are 10 and 12 years older than me. And that one of the things you said is that it was interesting for both you and mom in that you were kids that were essentially came from two different families, two different genetic backgrounds that came together. But all of us arrived at the same conclusion that you need to buy me a car and you never give me any money.
And all basically at the same time frame within your life. It was all happening at 16, 17. You know, your sister was already 17 when she came into my life, but it was still the same pattern. Mm-hmm. And then you go through these years and all of a sudden at 2021, you know, a light goes on and say, oh, I'm a human being again. And you stop all the bullshit, mm-hmm. or most of it, you know, not all of it. But It's an awakening, or it's a age growing up thing.
So is it, because here's what I'm kind of looking at it at, is that I feel like it could, for my window is 13 to 21, that my kid could literally go into a cocoon stage. So I have a deadline.
Or you wish he would go into cocoon stage.
No, I'm saying that I will essentially be cut off from him. Maybe not entirely, but 80% of it will be cut off as far as influence is concerned. That there will be something in his brain while I will have jurisdiction over his life and what he can and can't do. I won't be able to just be able to kind of talk to him and have him be as receptive as he may be right now, even though I would appreciate
it. He won't be as receptive, but if you stay on this course with him as you are now, you won't have half the issues.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
When he's 13, 16 years old that other people do. If he's a responsible and you've taught him to be responsible and do things, you won't have those issues.
Because
if you take a kid and give him everything trying to make him happy, then when he's 16 years old, he's a mess.
Yeah. I imagine it being that at 13 is my deadline. There's a countdown to then, and then I have to build up enough momentum that when we hit 13, that's the last final shove that I give him and hope that I've built up enough momentum in the world of responsibility and, you know, consequences and all that stuff that he just flows through and glides through those teenage years basically unscathed so that he could quickly come out on the other side going, oh, okay, that wasn't that bad.
That was a bump.
That was okay.
But it all depends on how much respect you have for each other going into that. Mm. Like your brother and sister, I had very little time. Mm-hmm. There was no relationship really built up there. With you, it was different. So with you, because there was more respect, there was fewer issues mm-hmm. than with your brother and sister. Had I had more time through that, then we would have had a better perspective of each other, and we probably would have had far less problems, even though they weren't that huge or anything either.
In perspective, it's not like
right.
I mean, you weren't on Maury Povich or anything.
No.
It wasn't like the cops were God. Yeah, exactly. And that's what I always imagine sometimes whenever this subject comes up on the show is that I feel like there are parents that are out there kind of listening to me going, fuck you, man. I don't know that there's anything I could do with my kid. When you have a 16-year-old son who's doing this, it's just like you wouldn't know what to do. And I feel like I sound pompous when I'm sitting here, you know, with my 4-year-old and, you know, fucking drooling, right. teething, toddler saying, you know, if you just give them expectations, you know, that's why I don't make this into an advice show. But I'm just holding on to that wing. It works out that way.
Your brother, as an example, he came to Modesto, come from a small school. He got thrown into a large school. He's like a freshman in high school. He went 30 days without even going to school. They never notified us. He'd leave in the morning. He'd come back. Didn't know anything. So I was finally advised of that. He was thrown out of high school, went into a continuation high school. He was just goofing off and everything there. I started going by every afternoon after work and checking on his progress. I wasn't on his ass or doing anything like that. I was just checking on his progress and confronting him with it.
Oh, so he did know you were going there. And
he did know because I would confront him with it. You know, you had this and that. You didn't do any of it. You know, why? I did that for about 3 weeks, and he finally said, you're not going to stop. I said, no. He says, okay. And he finished it up in another month.
Wow.
Because, again, he was held accountable for what he was doing.
So, in a sense, you just had to become an unmovable force.
Right. Every day I went by there, I checked on his work, and I presented it to him. And it wasn't in a mean or yelling, screaming or anything else. He just knew somebody was checking up on him.
Because you're a stepfather, it's like that. Right. That makes it easy for him to paint you into that role if you're just being a dick. And
it's no different than you as an adult with a job. If you're not doing your job, then you're feeling lousy and everything else. But when you do that job and you meet those goals, then everything's a win-win. Mm-hmm. For your company, for you, I mean, it's just a positive builder when you accomplish that. I have some different opinions on kids and what you expect of them. I think a child is capable of almost anything, given the right guidance in everything else. I mean, you were, what, 7, 8 years old. You were sailing a sailboat all across a lake by yourself. Most other parents would go, Jesus Christ, are you an idiot or something? But as you give them more and more responsibility, they're able to process that and do the correct thing.
Well, I think it's a weird, and I don't know if it's just because of my friends or what's going on down here, but I think that there's a natural inclination that you have that in that example that you immediately, and I found myself, I have to fight this. I fight this on a regular basis, like, oh, shit, he's going to be hurt. He's going to fucking die, or you know what I mean? Like these kinds of things, and you have to tell yourself, no, it's not. That's not going to happen. And I tell myself, this is how I rationalize it to myself, is that the odds of him dying are the risk of that far is far less than the gains that I will be able to reap by this experience or by him, you know, being able to do this independent thing. It's right. like I don't freak out, and I watch it with other people, and it kind of drives me nuts. Even friends of mine, that if Jack, my 20-month-old, is running around in an asphalt parking lot or something, and they're like, oh God. And it's like, hey guys, listen, you know what doesn't happen in a parking lot? 65 miles an hour. Number one. Number two, if I am sitting there always up his ass, okay, then he doesn't develop any kind of awareness. And I have an eye right. on him, and I look around, and then I go, hey, and I say, stay close. And then they turn around, and they come right back, and I don't have to worry or freak out. And what's happened now with Jacob, who's 4 years old, I don't have to worry about him in a parking lot at all. I don't really have to hold his hand when he walks across the street. And as he got older, like, he had a few scares where he was a little further away from me than he liked, and then a car zoomed by completely near him, like, wasn't even going to hit him, but just the loud noise, and it came out of nowhere and scared the shit out of him. And then it's like, so he's on, now he's got his head on a swivel. Like, he's fucking...
Well, but that teaches him to become more aware of his surroundings
right.
and pay attention, not just blindly go forward.
Right, because somebody else will take care of it. And that...
Right, and because you've made him responsible for that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, at the risk of, I don't want to, you know, make this go on forever and ever, but I do think this is interesting, and I think it's been helpful for me, at least, in my own situation with my kid. And I would like to button this, and I know that you and I will, I think our plan is we're going to do this at least once a month. But is there anything, like, I wish I wasn't necessarily your kid, just because I don't think that you feel like a need to sugarcoat anything. But I'm curious, just for the sake of the listeners who are listening to you, maybe there's somebody listening to you that's like, you know what, fuck it. Maybe I'm going to try this with my 3-year-old and maybe this will make sense. You've done it. Now your son is 34 years old. In all fairness, all honesty, is there anything that you kind of look at what I'm doing or have done in my life that you're like, maybe I missed the mark there? Or and please don't
no,
feel like you have to.
I have no reservations about anything that I did. Okay. None. And I expect you to continue that on with your own children.
Now, how about that?
Because
do you think
it
I'm
works.
Doing that? Or
do what?
Do you think I'm doing that with my kids? Is there anything you look at? Because I think that's also a common issue that parents deal with, where it's like grandma and grandpa have a different opinion on what you should be doing with your kid, you know? Is there anything that you look at that you're like, I wouldn't?
No. No, I mean, you're following in suit, and again... They're in the stage now. You're not going to know for another year or two what they've learned 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that time interval gets shorter and shorter as they grow older and are better able to communicate with you. So, but no, I don't see anything that you're doing that's out of the question or that I would change.
Yeah.
You just have to make them respond. I mean, children are the most fascinating things around. You can, they'll do damn near anything if you guide them or point them in that direction. And like I said, if you have expectations and everything else, they will do anything. They're capable of anything. They're fascinating, the way their minds work and how they absorb things and little things that you don't even know you're teaching them, but by example you're teaching them.
Mm-hmm.
And they just soak that in and they use it and throw it back at you. And the only downside of this, when you make them responsible and have expectations with them, when you want them to do something, you have to reason with them and get them to understand it.
Yes.
So they process that on their own, and they make that decision, okay, this is what I'm going to do. They have all this input, but now, okay, this is what I'm going to do. But when you raise a child that way, you just don't tell it to go do this because they're going to go, why?
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Long as they understand the why, long as they understand what the expected outcome is, they got no problem with it.
And there's an element with Jack that my younger one is that he doesn't even have the ability to articulate why. So he skipped ahead a few chapters where it's just like, if he has a plan and you're against it, he's like, all right, I got to take you out. I guess this isn't going to work out for us.
You got to go.
And I'm going to lose my shit.
But
right
because
here.
He is a very headstrong and opinionated young little guy. You know, he doesn't like to bend. Everybody's going to bend to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, that I think is a quality in a child. It is hard to deal with, but I also think you're not going to have as many issues with that child when they get older because they are their own person. They make their decisions. They make happen what they want to make happen around them. Uh-huh. They don't follow people. They don't go do whatever. They're on their own.
So maybe that is a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel if you have an asshole as a kid yourself, that you can kind of go, all right, maybe this really sucks right now, but I'm going to hold on to the hope and prayer that this is going to mean that it's going to be way better for them later on in life.
And for me, it has happened. You know, I have three adult children now, and I can't really qualm them on too many things. But I mean, it has happened.
Mm-hmm.
So you see what you did many, many years ago. Now it's transpiring into this adult that you're very proud of.
Well, thanks, Dan.
And if you don't do that for the child, then you have somebody with, you know, low self-esteem, not a very good opinion of them or whatever, and they'll bend and sway to whatever comes along.
Mm-hmm.
Just because that's what makes them feel good at the time.
Well, awesome. Well, let's wrap it up there. That's a nice little feel-good thing. And if anybody has any questions that they would like my dad and I discuss the next time we do a podcast, feel free to send those in to questions@thedadpodcast.com. And we can, because I think it's an interesting dynamic for dads to be able to listen to, is, you know, because I know that you're a grandfather, you know, in all technicality, but I was thinking about this when I was first thinking about doing the show with you on a regular basis. I was like, you know, people always ask, well, you know, you need to find somebody that has a teenager on. And I go, well, what else? Why not take it to the next level? Somebody who's got fucking 30-year-old kids and has some opinions. And also, I think that a lot of dads, I think dads have the most fight when it comes to this. Like, there's an old school way of doing things. And then there's this new way of doing things that I don't hate it, and I'm not necessarily against it, and I get it, but there's a part of me that's like, fuck, I really wish that I could just raise my kids in a bubble and be like my great-grandfather was. Like, I wish that there was an element that, you know, because I don't think that just because, you know, I'm a little gruff and rough around the edges doesn't mean my kid won't, you know, think I don't love them or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, you hear those stories about how I never, you know, my dad never told me he loved me, or he never said he was, you know, proud of me or anything. And it's, I don't know. But, well, we'll save that for another time. But, so thanks for doing this, Dad. Did you have fun? You enjoy yourself?
Had a great time.
All right, good. We'll do it again.
I love kids.
Good. Well, good. It's funny. That's the other part about it to me is that there's these elements to you that I knew, but I never had them articulated, I guess, in this context or whatever. Like, I always knew that you liked hanging around kids, but I didn't. It makes a lot of sense that they were as much of a complete part of who you are. Like, I remember now you playing with the cousins and everything like that. But my perception was always that it was kind of a fuck you to my grandma and your mother-in-law. But now I know that there's also an element of...
But they're just true, pure little things. And that's the biggest challenge in parenting, because you have it now. You have two children. They're almost opposites.
Yeah.
So it's your challenge to be able to learn and understand each one of them individually, because what works with one is not going to work with the other.
Amen to that. That's, yeah, it's...
And I think that's the biggest, hugest challenge of parenting is understanding each one. You can't treat them all the same. They don't react the same. They don't, you know, what one fears, the other one doesn't. What is a punishment to one is no big deal to me.
Yeah, and so many dynamics are happening right now because of their personality differences and because of the differences. Right. Even though they grew up in the same house, they grew up with different different influences and at different times. And like with Jake, like Jack, I have to maintain that he does not pick on his brother. Like he doesn't just wall off and beat the living shit out of him because Jacob is older and he's a little sweeter of a kid. Like he doesn't. But then now, because Jack has this side to him, it's weird that I'm just now today, I saw it for the first time, that Jack is almost having a reverse influence on his big brother, where Jacob kind of like kicked him today and knocked him over. And then I got to see Jacob have a malicious smile on his face. Like, yeah, fuck you. You little
I got
shit.
You.
Exactly. I was like, and then I have to sit there and there's an element that it's like, I get why you're doing this, but I also know my role where I have to go, hey, you don't push your little brother down. That's not okay. You know, I saw you smile. That's rude. That's fucked up. You know, you can't do that. And real quick, because I don't want to forget this the next time we talk, and then we'll wrap it up, is that I catch a lot of flack from listeners in the show in the olden days, and Bill, my former co-host as well, for letting my kids watch PG-13 movies, scary movies, and all that stuff. Now, you didn't have any kind of limit on what I could watch, yes or no?
None
whatsoever. Now, why? Did you have a theory behind that, or...?
You will, as a child, absorb or take it into your own perspective long as it's not influenced by other people's input. Mm-hmm. So if a scary movie or whatever, no big deal, you know, unless you make a big deal of it.
Like if you're the kind of person who screams at a scary movie, like you being the dad.
They're gonna scream the same way.
Right, but if you're just sitting there doing nothing... Like, all right. I do is if I look at Jacob and I see his eyes kind of going, oh, shit. Like, you know what I go? I just look at him and go, you know this is all fake, right? Like, none of this is real. It's just to entertain you, and being scared is kind of fun for some people. And he's like, uh-huh, yeah, I get it. I was like, all right.
But you have to allow them to process it in their own way without your influence and making a big deal of it or whatever. Even like a nudity scene or something like that, if you sit back and make no comments, they're not going to make any comments either.
Well, that's the thing, too, that I realized is that anything involving, like, sex, I started going, holy shit. And people, I look forward to your emails. But I do think that it's, like, it is kind of hypocritical, that it is weird, too. That it's, like, I think Jack Nicholson is famous for saying that it's R-rated if it's X-rated if you lick the breast, but it's R-rated if you hack it off with a machete.
Yes.
And how that makes no sense to him. And to me, I kind of feel like well, yeah, why not? Why teach him to be embarrassed, like... And I'm sure that there's a child psychologist out there who's like, there's things that they can't process and can't handle. But I do think that what you're saying, that what makes it an issue is when it is an issue. That if
and
that
when you make it an issue.
Right, exactly.
Come off as, oh, my God, you shouldn't be watching this, then you put this little stigma on there. Right. And by telling them, no, you're not supposed to watch it, they're going to even strive more to watch it and try to figure it out. But if you sit there and just... take it all in without really any comments or pushing your own opinion, that just goes along. And a good case in point, and this is not child pornography or anything like that, but years ago, somebody sent me a picture. It was a woman's breasts made up like an Easter bunny. And give you an example, my daughter's kids thought it was a cute little Easter bunny.
Like they didn't even see the boobs in it.
Right. Didn't see it at all.
Yeah.
Now, Tyler and Michaela, they saw the boobs right away because that was what they were exposed to.
Right. The listeners don't know, but that's the difference between my sister and my brother.
Total, yeah. Total
my brother and my...
Because her kids are so sheltered and not exposed to anything, it's just a rabbit.
Yeah, but my brother is constantly bugging his wife about lack of blowjobs and things of that nature. And so, that's interesting that the kids who have a different upbringing where that's not prevalent, they go, hey, look at the Easter Bunny. But the kids that hear nothing about blowjobs and you don't have sex with me enough go, look at the boobies.
Yeah, but if you know, at the same time, if
they
you would have made
boobies?
A big deal that these are boobs to Linda's kids, then they would have been freaked out about it. They walked by, saw two boobs, and went on. That was their perspective.
That's interesting.
Where the other two had a different perspective on it, and they saw it immediately. It was uncanny.
It is cool how I wish that there was a way that they could be closer in age, because it is hard for me to kind of look in. But it is funny how my sister's kids are completely different and similar in a lot of ways. Like, you see a lot of similarities in, like, what they do and all that stuff. But they do have entirely unique personalities, and yet we all kind of came from the same family. But I wish that there was a way to kind of compare, you know, Mike. I feel like, to be honest, I feel like my kids are kind of somewhere in the middle between those two. Like, I don't, but they're too young to tell. That's not worth it. That's, now it's pointless. But anyway, well, thank you for that, Dad. And again, send us the questions, and we'll look forward to it.
Love to answer them.
All right. So, on behalf of my father, this is Justin Worsham saying, stay frosty.